available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, gonna try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I am not David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network, but I am Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, normally together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. I am solo today. I've been traveling. We didn't get to do a show last week. David had some stuff come up, and I'm going out of town yet again. So since there was some newsy stuff going on, and you know, we know David doesn't like to talk about actual news, I'll talk about the news. I'll do my best to answer your questions and do a solo POC show for you guys today. It's recording this on Wednesday evening. Hope you guys had a nice weekend going into this, all this recruiting stuff going on in the Pac-12, and that's all kind of fun. So whatever team you follow, hopefully you're checking in on what's going on with all these visits and everything going on, because we've had the dead period end for the first time in 15 months. So whatever school you're covering, go to the Pac-12, Pac-12 24/7 site and check out what's going on there. I'm sure your staff has it on lockdown, what's going on each individual campus as far as all the recruiting stuff going on. It's really exciting just to have this kind of recruiting coverage we just haven't had this way for quite a while. If you want to get a hold of us, you can email us, pac12podcast@gmail.com. We got a bunch of emails to get to today. We got a big text message and a voicemail. And if you want to leave us a text message or call us and leave us a voicemail, the number is 424-532-0678. You could also tweet us, mostly tweet me, at pac12podcast on the Twitters. The website is pac12podcast, where you find all of the old episodes. Go to reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions and chat with other POC listeners about the Pac-12. And if you have Apple Podcasting app, the Apple Podcasting app on any of your devices, please follow the POC, follow the Podcast of Champions. Rate us with 5 stars. We love it. If you say anything and it includes a 5-star rating, we will read it on the air, because you know, that's what we do. Don't have any new reviews that I am seeing right now, so I guess you guys were waiting for David to come back, because he likes reading those. But we will get to all of those when we get to them. We got a lot of news here on the POC to get to, and I'm going to play this breaking news thing. Because our friend, our pal, the departing as of 3 weeks from now, Larry Scott, did an exit interview with a friend of mine, Ralph Russo, from the AP. And it is as awful as you would have expected. Did any of his Larry Scott-isms change in this interview? Was there any sort of recollection of, you know what, I could have done things this way, going back on, you know what, in retrospect, we should have done this? None of that. Sticking with his company line, sticking with everything that he had said before, didn't change an absolute thing. He is this personified.
The truth is, we all know Champagne Larry likes to roll large, right?
Still rolling large, still not taking any. He takes credit where he feels that the conference did well, even in places when the conference didn't do well. But as far as like taking responsibility for the shortcomings, yeah, if you expected that from this interview, I would go check it out. But yeah, you're not going to get it. Another friend of mine, Andy Staples, had a really interesting tweet. He says, getting around to reading Ralph Russo's exit interview with Larry Scott, Larry flawlessly transitions from, quote, it's Clay Helton's fault, to, quote, I didn't lose, I just ran out of time, in the same answer. And the answer he's talking about, as Larry Scott said, the biggest regret is that we didn't have teams performing better in football during our 11 years. Certainly, we've got some brands that traditionally would be making the college football playoff and competing for a national championship. It didn't happen for a variety of reasons. Thankfully, it has happened in our other sports, where we won more championships than any other conference every year, including what was the best overall conference in basketball, men's and women's, this year. Men's did not win a championship your entire tenure, Larry. But competitively, teams not reaching their traditional potential was a real regret. Secondly, hindsight is 20/20, but I didn't anticipate the amount of change amongst our leadership, presidents, chancellors, and athletic directors that were really aligned about a long-term vision. And as we had change in leadership on our campuses, the focus became much more on short-term pressures. Yeah. Okay, Larry. So he's blaming, Clay Helton, he's blaming, Oregon, everyone that wasn't making the playoffs. He went on and had a longer answer about, the conference doesn't win you football games and stuff like that. So I think Andy put that well. But the hindsight thing, it's like, basically, he had snow-jobbed all of the presidents to his vision. And once new presidents came in and realized his vision was crap and it wasn't working, and he was basically a snake oil salesman, and they were like, hey, dude, this ain't working for us. He had to change his tune. And I don't get why did it matter that athletic directors changed? Like, I don't get that, because he never talked to the athletic directors in the beginning. That wasn't what he did. He only talked to them later when he had to and was forced to. So a lot of this stuff. Wilner had a good column on this. I would recommend, reading Wilner's stuff anyway, but he kind of summarized it with, he put in other words, Larry Scott's media strategy was bold and brilliant, but the presidents and athletic directors don't have the patience to wait 12 years for the validation that I'm certain will come. And don't blame me if they're frustrated that the Big Ten and SEC collect 10 or 20 million more in revenue every year. It's not my fault that the presidents and athletic directors believed my projections that the Pac-12 networks would sign up with DirecTV and generate 5 million annually for each campus instead of the 2 million they're averaging. And he said, if they would have just listened to me, they wouldn't fret over the impact the massive revenue disparity has on their ability to hire and fire coaches, build support staffs, and expand recruiting budgets, and go on and on. But so basically that's what Scott was saying. And what John is saying is, even if Scott was correct, and he's not, you don't say those things. You admit the media strategy wasn't perfect, and you always want to provide more resources for the schools, and you wish them luck in the future, and you're thankful for the experience. That's great. You depart graciously. Perfect. Unless, of course, you don't care. And why should Scott care? He's heading out the door having earned about $45 million in salary during his tenure at the Pac-12. Meanwhile, the Pac-12 schools, his baby, have paid each school just $20 million over that time. So, wow. He was making more money than the schools were. So that sort of like is a good way to encapsulate the Larry Scott tenure as a Pac-12 commissioner. But I recommend you read the Ralph Russo story. He talked to Larry Scott for about 25 minutes. There's some good tweets out there. Like I mentioned, the Andy Staples tweet. And of course, our buddy John does a good job with the exit interview column. And go over that. We also, John Wilner also talked about George Klyavkov, the new Pac-12 commissioner. He has a Twitter handle. It's Klyavkov, so it's K-L-I-A-V-K-O-F-F, at that. He has a little under 15,000 followers and is a regular tweeter. And if you remember, Larry Scott didn't have a public Twitter account. I'm sure he had some burners or something out there, people looking for it. But John talked about some of the good things about, George tweeting, but what stuck me was he's a huge Virginia fan. So he follows like the Virginia beat writers. He follows what's going on with the teams and, tweets about when, someone wins a championship and things like that. I think this is a great sign. He's a college sports fan. Like Larry Scott looked at it as like it was in a lab somewhere, like, oh, this is college sports thing I will manipulate and play with. And no, George Klyavkov is a huge fan. He knows it. If you're a big Washington fan and you're on Dogman all the time talking with other fans, you know what the message board culture is like. You follow all that stuff. Then you run into someone who's a huge Utes fan and is on Utes Zone all the time. That's like a kindred spirit. You have something in common. You both are crazy people on these message boards and read all this stuff or whatever. Having, you know, knowing the new commissioner does that as well, I think that's a positive sign. So good stuff from there. Another column from John Wilner. It was in the mailbag. I forget, in his hotline. Make sure you check that stuff out too. We got some news out of Colorado.
Colorado Buffalo.
Remember that guy, Sam Neuer? You know, he was the safety turned quarterback, quarterback turned safety, back to quarterback, ends up being the starter. Yeah, he's in the transfer portal. So he's out. Should be a new, it'll be an interesting, you know, battle for who's going to be the starting quarterback. But the guy that was starting last year, 4-2, I believe Colorado was, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, he's peace out. He's in the portal. So a lot of portal action for Pac-12 quarterbacks in and out across different teams, stuff like that. So Sam Neuer is now in the portal. That happened earlier this week. Also, David Shaw from, you know, the school that he's part of.
Stanford Cardinal.
Head coach of the Cardinal did a great job on the NFL Network covering the NFL draft. But Stanford has a 9 a.m. game against K-State. So this is that, like, I think it's, I forget which, one of the classic games or something like that. But I think Wilner tweeted this. This was Stuart Mandel tweeted this out. He said, "You don't often hear a high profile coach rip a TV partner, but Stanford's David Shaw is, quote, pissed at Fox for a 9 a.m. body clock kickoff week one versus K-State. And the quote from Shaw is, "That to me is something that is egregious, and I don't care who I piss off." So, yeah, you know, you don't usually want to piss off your partners. You're going to get huge ratings for that game. You know, we saw USC and Arizona State do it. Nobody passed out. I mean, everyone was okay. The game was exciting. There's crazy stuff that happened. You know, this is a game you got to travel for. So that's not, you know, ideal. Arizona State had to too, but it was only, I guess it was 10 a.m. for them and not 9. Well, I don't know. I forget what the time change was, but yeah, I don't know. David Shaw, like, this isn't a battle. I don't think you want to, like, you know, run down, but whatever. Pullman, Washington. We have some news there.
Washington State Cougars.
Remember Jaden DeLora. So the freshman quarterback coming over from Hawaii, definitely familiar with the system Nick Rolovich was running. He had a little DUI problem, missed spring. And so that you saw Cameron Cooper, who's been around the Washington State program quite a while, but he was brought in by Leach as an air raid kind of guy. But they also have Tennessee graduate transfer Jarrett Guarantano. They had the majority of the reps this spring. I think Jarrett got hurt early on in spring too, but not having the starter from last year, Jane DeLora, certainly disappointment in the spring, but the Cougars will have their full complement of quarterbacks through the summer because he has been reinstated. So Nick Rolovich announced that he was going to be reinstated. I think it was on the radio. So Jane DeLora is back. So one of the questions, you know, there's a lot of quarterback question marks throughout the Pac-12, that should be one of them that is taken care of as of now. We also know that Arizona
Wildcats,
100% stadium capacity this fall. So, yay. We'll give them applause. Love to see that. If you saw the Utah LA game, the Utah Jazz versus the Los Angeles Clippers, in Utah on Tuesday night, holy cow, to see a full stadium like that was insane. So having an outdoor thing, 100% capacity, I hope that the whole Pac-12 can do that the fact that Arizona is able to announce that now is pretty cool. So they want to try to generate some excitement. Will it be 100% full? Just because you got a Jed Fish, you got a new coach, and just, you got some hype around the program. Probably not. You know, a team coming off a 12-game losing streak, but I like that they're taking the initiative to get out there and say, hey, everybody is welcome. So props to Arizona. I love that they're going to be doing that. All right, one other little noteworthy thing I want to mention. There's some cool stuff happening in the Pac-12. I would like to see, I would thank Tom Hecker, who does a great job marketing over at Jockey. He's been sending us swag, sending us some stuff. I got a box in the mail full. I mean, like really full, like super full of these Pac-12 mini brief keychains. And so they have all the different colors of every Pac-12 program. He sent me a few early on and then a box full of every program. So basically, if you're going to see me, if you're going to be in LA, you're a fan of whatever Pac-12 school, email me, let me know. I think David's got some too, although he doesn't like to be bothered, but you can email me, let me know. I'll meet you somewhere. I will give you a mini brief keychain of the school of your choice because I have a ton of them. We want to do them as giveaways. Hopefully we do some kind of in-person event at some point. And if we do, I will definitely bring those, a way to get it to all you guys. But I think that would be very cool. So thanks, Tom. The Jockey people have been awesome. Like the best, no Pac-12 sponsor has been like reaching out to us like they are. And they've been great. So I appreciate that. And hopefully this partnership works out. I'm sure it will. It seems like it's going well for the Pac-12 and for Jockey. So thanks to those guys. All right, why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, and I'll do my best to answer all the questions in the mailbag.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
All right, we're back here on the podcast of champions. Let's start off with a voicemail, our buddy Perk.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. Hope you guys had an awesome Memorial Day weekend. It's a lot of discussion the past few weeks about the college football playoff, and I think Dave's pretty correct on, you know, the Pac-12 standing within the playoff has nothing to do with the playoff format and just the fact that it hasn't been performing up to its standards, particularly USC or Oregon. And I was wondering if that at all would factor in into kind of the judgment of Larry Scott's tenure as commissioner. If you guys think people would have viewed him differently had his tenure as commissioner probably coincided or aligned more with the run of the USC teams in the 2000s and then more of the Oregon teams in the late or the early to mid 2010s. I'm not saying that those teams winning would have changed people's views in the Pac-12 network, but I think I was just wondering if you guys think that a lot of the just good teams having down years or not performing up to their past standards. Some of that frustration was taken out on Larry Scott. And had that not been the case, if he would have been viewed a bit differently as a commissioner. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Perk, thanks for that question. I'm curious to see what David thinks about this. But, yeah, I think that would have an impact on it if there was a Clemson in the Pac-12 during Larry Scott's tenure. But one of the things you look at is college football athletics, the landscape changes over time. If you read that exit interview, I mean, he just had this plan. He still thinks like 2024, there's going to be this great, you know, the Pac-12 is positioned best. And you're just ignoring how it's completely getting crushed right now. It's sort of like you're getting your, you know, you're, it's like a 12 round, you know, boxing match with Mike Tyson, and you're getting knocked down again and again and again. But there's somehow, you know, you have this strategy. You know, if you make it to the 12th round, we have got the strategy that we could win the fight. But it just doesn't work that way. Like, you would have to, I mean, the amount of money the Pac-12 would have to make for its schools, members, institutions, to make up for all the money they've lost year after year after year, it doesn't make any sense. They'd have to, I mean, he was touting, like, having Apple and Amazon, like, coming to the table and significant equity offers. It's like, okay, like, what did that do? What did that make money for the schools? Like, no, like, your strategy was terrible. It just wasn't good. If you had a Clemson, if USC was really good, or Oregon was on some amazing run, and you were making the playoff every year, and, like, you know, maybe, you know, almost win a championship and stuff, it would make things a little bit better. But a lot of the strategy, like, the problem is Larry Scott didn't care as much about that stuff. And if it happened, it would just would have happened because it did, not because of some strategy that he implemented. He still was touting, you know, the whole point of these networks, we wanted to get those Olympic sports on TV. It's like, if that was the point of your network, like, you, the point of the network wasn't to make money, because those don't make money. The SEC puts that stuff on, but only around, like, the major content, the football stuff. It's like it's a nice side dish, but you're putting your side dish as the main course, and that's never going to work. If you're going to an expensive steakhouse, and the first thing you see is, like, these garlic mashed potatoes that are really good, like, well, where the hell's my steak? Like, oh yeah, we overcooked it, and you don't get a steak today. But our garlic mashed potatoes are the best in the city. Oh, that's great. But I didn't come to a steakhouse to have my garlic mashed potatoes. That's excuse me. That's a great side. It's not the main course. And I feel like, yeah, could a great team in the Pac-12 help? It would be, it'd sort of be like cough medicine, like, and I just coughed. You know, it would fix some of the symptoms, but it wouldn't necessarily fix the ailment that you have if you have the flu or something. That would be my take on it. But thank you, Perk, for that question. This one's coming from Jeremy in Mapleton, Utah. He's talking about ASU and prestige. Fellas, in a recent episode, Ryan mentioned that it actually would have been good for a school like Arizona State to be caught up in the admissions scandal being tied together with schools like Stanford, UCLA, and others. How quickly you forget they actually were mentioned. Oh, this isn't going to go well. Court documents from the case included this email from Lori Loughlin, Aunt Becky. He would like me to read it in Aunt Becky's character. Unfortunately, I don't have those skills. I couldn't even tell you what she sounds like. But the quote is, "We just met with our older daughter's college counselor this morning. I'd like to maybe sit with you after your session with the girls, as I have some concerns and want to fully understand the game plan and make sure we have a roadmap for success as it relates to our daughter and getting her into a school other than ASU. I know I'm personally looking forward to seeing an overhyped ASU team fail to meet expectations again this year. Jeremy in Utah." Thanks, Jeremy. Yeah, I do remember something like that where there was someone took a shot at ASU where they were like, we're going to pay, I think in this case, to get our kid into USC so they don't have to end up at ASU. We're just talking about prestige from that Varsity Blues kind of scandal stuff. And really, it's just, there's no it's just made up, right? It's just what you think is great. You know, Harvard has like this enormous endowment, so there's some backing up of some of the greatness, but it's really just, you know, the more times you're mentioned in movies or whatever, like, yeah, I mean, they're going to make Legally Blonde about Harvard law and not necessarily about Northwestern law. You know, with Northwestern's really good, but Harvard's got more prestige. So if you did it about Northwestern law, I think they have a law school, I don't even know. You know, really good school, but there's just more prestige at Harvard. Just it's been around longer. There's just whatever. And so, yeah, so this the whole thing was about prestige and stuff. So thanks that one, for that one, Jeremy. Oh, God. Michael in Seattle about beating a dead horse. This is long. Ryan and Dan. Taking shots at Dave. He's not even here. Well, here we are on the Sunday of Memorial Day weekend. Sun is out. I'm on my third beer of the day. And nothing excites me more than to write into my favorite podcast host and beat the dead horse some more on everyone's favorite topic, playoff expansion. Seems like over the past few weeks, there have been two schools of thought about the 12-team expansion scenario, both rebutted by Dave. 12 teams being more inclusive of all conferences, including the Pac-12, and the intangible marketing of making the playoffs being spread among multiple conferences and teams. I don't think it's arguable that the quality of the top teams in college football takes a noticeable drop-off after the usual 6-7 suspects, and that opening up auto-conference bids won't change this. I do think there's a sales pitch in making the playoff that some of these fringe teams could leverage and gathering more talent. However, we keep hearing from you, Dave, that for everyone clamoring for the Pac-12 representation in the current 4-team format, all we need is for USC to get its act together with recruiting and coaching. To that, I ask a simple question. Why should I really care as a Pac-12 conference fan? After all, a few years ago, you made a pretty clear observation that Clemson's success as an annual entrant into the 4-team playoff structure doesn't really do anything to bolster the resume of the ACCs. It's still an average to below average football conference, top to bottom, arguably worse than the Pac-12. If USC was to clean up in SoCal recruiting and hire a coach who had a track record of program building and decent roster management, all that shows that they are doing what they should be doing, regardless of any action by the other 11 teams. Suppose this really speaks to what is true about the top teams in college football, regardless of the size of the playoffs. No matter how much money is available from TV deals or playoff appearances, or how supposed deep your conference is, schools that compete year after year make an annual decision to commit much, much more above and beyond what is received from a conference distribution to hire the best coaches and build programs through armies of staff to recruit and develop. They're spending both smartly and in insane amounts, most of which is specific to each school's checkbook. I don't see the millions of dollars slice of pie that Ole Miss or Mizzou gets through the SEC deal suddenly making them a playoff caliber team just because Alabama wins the dang thing every year. I think it makes a big difference, though, like where you're seeing Michigan State hire away Colorado's head coach for 1 year, a guy that's 5-7, Mel Tucker, because Michigan State has a buttload more money and they can make mistakes. They can go out and spend a lot of money on a head coach and a staff. And if they're wrong, they can fire him and do the same thing 2 years later, where the Pac-12 is going to have limitations because they don't have that kind of flexibility, I guess you could say, financially. But anyway, he says, there's more paragraphs, by the way. All said, the one positive element of a 12-team structure is one you briefly touched on a few weeks ago. With the current 4-team structure, we see a playoff with more parity between the same slew of teams selected. Certainly seems like this format is more in line with an NFL playoff environment, albeit with fewer participants. A 12-team playoff with auto bids decreases parity, but could very well move us back towards the, quote, weird football elements of David versus Goliath matchups that college football is so lovingly known for. Sure, you get your blowouts, but you've also have potential with heavy emphasis on potential for great TV. You have potential for great TV. I suppose this is an eye of the beholder, but having a bunch of historical conference tied auto-slotted matchups in the bowl structure isn't too far off from having a bunch of first-round playoff matchups between conference champs or at-large bids, albeit without all the pomp and circumstance of each bowl's history. I'd also note that in a 12-team format, I don't think it's too far-fetched to assume The Pac-12 has a pretty good chance of sending two teams every year. If you assume two auto bids for two group of five teams, roughly six bids go into the SEC and Big 10 schools. That leaves you four bids for three conferences, three of which go to the champ in their respective divisions. Are we really thinking that the second best team in the Pac-12 doesn't compare to the second best team in the ACC or the Big 12, especially if that team is USC? Keep on keeping on. Enjoy some well-deserved R&R for all the sleepless nights of prep work you guys put into the show. It's got to be nice to have some time off. Michael in Seattle. Hey, Michael. That was quite the email. So you know David's not a fan. And actually, the talk right now has been a lot more about a 12-team one. And to me, does it mean that the Pac-12 is going to win a championship anytime soon because you're opening it up and they have a chance? No, I don't think so. The teams have to be better. But it's sort of, to me, I would say an analogy is like, if there's a popular high school party and you get an invite and you're like, you know, maybe you're a decent athlete, you're like, you're all right, you're not like at the popular table at lunch, but you get invited to this popular party. It gives you an opportunity to kind of spread your wings a little bit and hang with the big boys and the big, you know, the popular people. Are you going to go home leaving that party having a date with the prom queen? Probably not, but your social standing is going to be a little bit better off because you were at that party. Now, is there potential for you to get embarrassed and thrown in the pool with your underwear tied, you know, pulled up over your head? Yeah, I guess that's a risk. But I think you just want that seat. For me, you always just wanted an opportunity with that seat at the table. So this will be a chance for the Pac-12 to go to that popular party and maybe make some noise. You know, maybe they can chug a beer faster than everyone else. They get an upset in the first round. And who knows? They're dating a cheerleader by the end of the day. All right. That analogy coming to you from my brain, just being fried from talking for the last couple hours. We have a text message. Ryan, is there any indication that Clay Travis is the Qin Shi Huang type leader this unit needs to galvanize and plow horse this team to prominence and not just an unwitting, ham-fisted executioner filleting the last few flaps of flesh off the Trojan horse before it falls over dead? No idea what you are talking about. I heard something about Clay Travis and Rush Limbaugh. I don't know what that is. I never got into it. Don't really care. So Dave would probably have some strong opinions on that. So maybe we can circle back for him. All right. We got Hithloday. It's Gravis in Cubans. Scopulus Yeastus. I don't know. But I think the translation, it's Latin. Summer, heavy summer upon summer. So we'll see where he's going with this one. This past week, I've been trying to figure out why Colorado made the defensive coordinator moves that they have, and I'm not satisfied with any solution. Here's the timeline. All right. Hithloday loves to dive into this kind of stuff. October 2017, dateline, October 2017. Tyson Summers is fired midway through his second season as head coach of Georgia Southern, going 5-13. He becomes an analyst at Georgia under Mel Tucker, for who is the defensive coordinator for the 2018 season. December 2018, Tucker is hired Colorado News head coach and brings Summers with him as a new defensive coordinator, as well as a couple other analysts from Georgia. Three positional coaches from the previous staff at Colorado are retained. November of 2019, Colorado's defense, after getting a bunch of players back from injury, finishes the season strong by beating Stanford and Washington, limiting them to 13 and 14 points, respectively. February 2020, Tucker's hired by Michigan State, bringing three assistants with him from Colorado. Carl Durrell is hired in Boulder. He retains four assistants from the previous staff, including the incumbent Summers, but hires a new defensive line coach, Chris Wilson. All right. November 2020, Colorado goes 4-2 with several strong defensive performances, including limiting San Diego State to 10 points and Arizona to 13. January 2021, Durrell fires Summers and promotes Wilson to D.C. Wilson continues as defensive line coach, as does every other assistant, and the only other staff change is hiring a new inside linebacker coach since that was Summers' unit. April 2021, in the spring game, Colorado has switched from the hybrid 3-4, 3-3-5 defense Summers was running to heavy 4-3, the heavy 4-3 Wilson deployed when he was the co-defensive coordinator at Mississippi State from 2010 to 2012. The Buffs don't have the roster to make this a smooth transition. Too few bodies in the defensive line and the wrong types at that. The best explanation I can come up with is that the Colorado administration isn't giving its new coaches a free hand in hiring, and that's why so many assistants get retained in each transition, and why Tucker wasn't interested in bringing many with him to East Lansing when he did come into real money. Nonetheless, Summers has done a better job than I was expecting at defensive coordinator, given the circumstances, and his late firing this year is baffling. So it must be that Durrell chose to spend the political capital he earned as Pac-12 Coach of the Year by getting rid of the DC he was forced to keep and getting his own man. But then why Wilson, a longtime defensive line coach, who wants to switch systems to one Colorado doesn't have the right personnel for, why wouldn't he make an outside hire of a 3-4 expert? And then he says, David, do you have any insight into Durrell's thinking from his time at UCLA? Ryan, what do you know about Wilson from his time as USC's defensive line coach, 2014 and 2015? All right. A lot going on here, Hithloday. So I don't know if you want some like blanket explanation as to why all of that happened. I don't think you're going to get one. I feel like if you look at the hires, Mel Tucker comes in, never been a head coach. He's a DC. He brings in someone that was a former, a former head coach that's an analyst. Not that hard to bring him in as a hire because he's only an analyst right now. I think that would probably explain quite a bit. Carl Durrell has been out of the college game for quite a long time. Some continuity would probably make some sense there. I think there's probably a lot of small reasons why a lot of these things happened. And if Carl Durrell wanted to switch defenses, unfortunately, when he came in, it would have been a lot harder to do because it was the pandemic year and everything was shut down and he couldn't even meet with his staff and his people and all of that. So I don't know the details behind the late firing. It was really kind of strange, but my guess is there was something he would have wanted to have done when he took over, and wasn't that he wasn't able to because he didn't have the support from the school. It was, that would have been really hard to do with the pandemic. That would be my take on things. It would be great if we could talk to Adam Munster Tiger about that and get some more insight. And I think we want to try to talk to all of the individual publishers just to kind of, get an update of what's going on this offseason. I'd love to be able to do that. So hopefully we can. So that would be my guess for Durrell's thinking when you're at what you asked David. I liked Wilson as a defensive line coach at USC. He just seemed like he was someone that knew, college and the NFL game. I liked him. I didn't really know much about him being a defensive coordinator just because I when I covered him, he was coaching the defensive line. But he was a guy I liked and a guy, I thought he was doing a good job where he was at USC. Well, hopefully that answers your question, Hithloday. But we'd love to talk to Adam to get some more insight on that. But that would be my guess, is just a lot of different factors. But looking at the two hires, one first-time head coach, one head coach that hadn't been around a long time, that might have a lot to do with why you kept assistants on. Whereas if you had hired like Urban Meyer, well, I guess it's a bad example. He was outside of, like, say someone's hiring Luke Fickell, established coach, hot coach, knows what he wants, has a lot of clout, can, if he wants to upgrade his staff, he can go and he doesn't need to bring an analyst over from Cincinnati. He could go get an assistant coach from Florida State or Texas or something that he really likes and get from a bigger school because he's going to have some clout going to a new program. Thanks for that one, Hithloday. We got this is a very convoluted text message from Choney19. I'm going to have to please put this together. Hey, guys, I had a burning question about playoffs. Just kidding. F that. I did want to mention it seems like there is a parallel between the Pac-12 until Pete Carroll came along in the talent, and that talent started leaving the conference area until Carroll made USC a winner. and made it cool to stay on the West Coast, leading to more talent, not just staying at SC, but also Oregon and Cal. There's some truth to that. I think Pete Carroll did a good job of having West Coast talent, make it cool to stay on the West Coast. He recruited a ton of guys to USC, but I think it helped the rest of the Pac-12, where if you're the best player on the West Coast and you didn't want to go to USC, you're DeSean Jackson, you go to Cal and instead of going to like Florida State. I think that kind of stuff was happening. So he's okay. So he's got some points here. One, isn't right now a similar situation where we're just a, say, Luke Fickell trickle away from the West Coast being attractive to stay for, and even schools having to make better hires out of necessity? Well, I mean, I don't know what Luke Fickell's personality would be like on the West Coast. I think he's mostly an Ohio guy. But if you brought someone to SC or whatever it is, you know, we're seeing Mario Cristobal recruit well at Oregon, but probably has to be somewhere in Southern California, USC or UCLA, that was just cleaning up in Southern California and making it cool to stay on the West Coast, I think that would probably help the rest of the Pac-12 too. Two, if you each were hosting this podcast solo and wanted, I am doing that by the way, wanted to take a break from talking Pac-12 one week, what topics would interest you the most to talk about and field questions for an hour? So I would have to host a podcast and field questions about some other topic. I would have to feel comfortable enough about that topic to field questions. That's a good one. Both of us would be more experts in like these fields that we're in now. I don't feel like, I love talking about like World War II history and stuff, but I don't think I'm enough of a buff that I could like answer questions for an hour on a podcast about it. If I had to do something, I think I could do a pretty good job, something from my old career, from the engineering world or technical speaking, where if you are like a technical person that would have to do public speaking, working with customers, I was pretty good at that kind of stuff. Yeah, maybe something like that. And three, what are your current three favorite podcasts? I really mostly just listen to sports stuff. And I'm not even listening to that much. I'm mostly just like the college football podcast. Like I'll listen to like the Audible. My buddy Bruce is on there. My buddy Pete Thamel is doing the Yahoo Sports podcast with Wetzel. And, I'm friends with Stuart Mandel too. They're both part of the Audible. But Wetzel and Pat Forty, I knew Pat Forty a little bit from when I was at Rivals. I like that one. You know, they do that fairly often. And the Solid Verbal, I'm friends with those guys. So I kind of like my friends that do college football. That's the ones I listen to. And four, with COVID calming down, how about instead of a POC Zoom call, you organize a meetup at a local brewery? Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work. Shoney. Oh, yeah, 100%. We want to do that. That would be amazing. And I could give you guys those mini briefs, those keychains. So, yeah, 100% would like to do that. All right, this is from Thomas, curious about George. Hey, guys, the weather is warming up and the days are growing longer, so that could only mean one thing. It's time for summer vacation. This year, my plans are already set, but 2022 is a different story. I fully expect by then that our beloved conference already will have completed its tender embrace with Las Vegas and thus schedule next year's Pac-12 Football Media Days at Siegfried and Roy's Secret Garden at the Mirage Hotel and Casino. I mean, is there anywhere else you'd want to see Yogi Roth struggle to remain relaxed and upbeat than in blistering hot weather surrounded by fearsome white tigers? Could even Nick Saban withstand that type of scrutiny? I think not. In all seriousness, though, I'm one of those listeners who are cautiously optimistic about the Pac-12's new commissioner and innovative thinking he seems to bring to the table. But that mantra of innovation and promise of new revenue streams is exactly what got Larry Scott hired for the job over a decade ago. It's time to accept the uncomfortable possibility that the Pac-12 presidents may have really just replaced Champagne Larry with resort fee George. Whoa, good one. We're going to need a drop for resort fee George, but we're going to let him start first. This isn't a knock on our incoming commissioner, but rather an acknowledgement that the idea of anchoring the Pac-12 to Las Vegas is showing its age too. Instead of being, quote, Disneyland for adults with elaborate themes, cheap rooms, great food, and exciting performances underwritten by Smoky Casino floors circa 2009, Sin City is now a hellscape of millennials and Gen Z types unconscionably overpaying for poolside bottle service and valet parking as if the experience being somewhat on their belonging somewhere on their bucket list. Lest we forget, while Las Vegas isn't the only place hotels levy a bunch of hidden charges, it's the only destination I've found where you can pay a $40 resort fee that equals almost 50% of the room rate itself. That sort of nickel and dime approach is exactly what Pac-12 fans do not want to encourage the CEO group to adopt because, well, who wants to pay more for the exact same thing? Yeah, if you go and you get, you know, you join any of these resort, you know, rewards clubs or whatever for the for Las Vegas, and you know, you go during the week sometimes, it's pretty easy to get comped rooms. And you get a comp room and there's still like a $47.50 charge for the resort fee, which what pays for your internet and stuff. That's kind of crazy. You still got to like, it's not like you can like have at it at the mini bar or anything either. Okay. That said, the idea of being the quote conference of pool parties is a seductive one to be sure. My imagination runs wild with the idea of all the exciting possibilities. Why stop at having a conference championship game at the Death Star? Why not open a Pac-12 branding store like the NBA does in New York, where throngs of perplexed and hungover people can peruse through a massive inventory of jockey undergarments along with Rick Neuheisel's seasonal collection of designer athletic gloves? It sounds silly, I know, but the point is any conference can throw a few events a year in Las Vegas and draw big crowds, but hosting the Pac-12's football preview show from a tailgate at the Mandalay Bay's wave pool, that takes some extra poblanos on your huevos rancheros, guys. Obviously, I'm eager to hear David's snarky thoughts about this and Ryan's potentially kind words as well. But in sum, I'm curious about George, and hopefully compared to Larry, he focuses less on the sizzle and more on the steak. Dry-aged USDA prime topped with mushroom caps and foie gras butter, of course. Keep up the superlative work. Thomas. Awesome email, Thomas. And he sent it like a Google Doc. This wasn't just like an email. This was like, it was crafted in Google Docs before he sent it over here. Yeah. Okay. So David would be snarky. I would have potential kind words for all of this. I think I didn't realize that those White Tigers were still around. I haven't been to the Mirage in quite a while, but if they still have that secret garden and the White Tigers are still there, that's kind of cool. But it's been a long while since I've seen those. It is crazy how it's changed from the, you know, the Disneyland for adults. And now it's just like everything is super expensive. And, you know, you can get Rodeo Drive shopping experience and bottle service at the pool and, you know, needed month ahead reservations for this restaurant that you're going to pay an arm and a leg for and all that stuff. But I still like Vegas. I still like the gambling aspect. But you got to use what's available to you. And Las Vegas is available to the Pac-12, and it is a destination for everywhere across the country. I think you do have to embrace it. And I'm not worried about resort fee, George. And, you know, as far as like...
The truth is, we all know Champagne Larry likes to roll large, right?
I feel like just... I've never heard an interview from Larry Scott that sounded anything like George Klyavkov did in his press conference. And we're going to get a chance to talk to him when he starts. So the Pac-12 said we could do that. That will be great. I feel like he's much more of a straight shooter. He's much more going to say, if he screws up, I don't think he's going to say, blame other people. I think he's going to say, you know what? We had a problem. I had to try this, and I thought this would be a good solution. That wasn't it, you know, and the good thing is that we learned this and we're going to go here and do that. I feel like that's more him. And I like that kind of approach where Larry Scott just is like, he's talking from his ivory tower, talking to the huddled masses below. You know, if you saw him walking by the tower, avert your gaze, don't even look at me. I'm above all of you. I'm above your pay grade. You know, I'm not going to listen to what you're saying. I have this vision. and it's right, and that's where we're going with it. And the fact that this didn't work, that's all of your fault, and it's not mine. And I just don't think Klyavkov's like that. It just doesn't seem like it. You know, maybe he turns out to be. Who knows? I don't know him from anybody. But just from what I've seen and read and heard when I did the teleconference with him, I feel it's very different than Larry Scott. I like embracing Vegas. I think you have to, you know, if you're recruiting to your school and you're Washington State, you're recruiting to Pullman, or you're Arizona State and you're recruiting to Tempe, there's different things you're going to sell, right? I mean, there's different traditions. There's different what the environment's like, what the coaching's like, all that stuff. You're going to accentuate the positives. And I talked about this on the USC podcast. You know, if you're trying to date someone, you're doing like a speed dating thing, which I don't think even exists anymore. That 5 minutes you get talking across from that person, you're trying to sell what's good about you. If you happen to be like the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, probably going to come up. If you're unemployed and living in your car, probably not going to come up. You might talk about the humanitarian work you do or whatever it is. Like, you're going to sell what's good about you, and as you should. The other stuff will come out eventually. But I think one of the cool things about the Pac-12 footprint, there's bad things about it, like the time zone and the Pac-12 after dark and all that kind of stuff. But you got some cool cities, you got some cool college towns, and you got Las Vegas. And if you can use that, and it actually makes sense because of the location, it's not just, hey, we're going to use it because we're down the street from, you know, Comcast. So we're, you know, we want to be in the same city as Facebook or whatever. Like, no, there's actual logistical reasons that you would want to be in Las Vegas. Not, this is the most expensive place to be. It doesn't really make any sense. It's hard to get talent here. Like, are the people that work at the network can't even afford to live there? We're going to fly in the president of our network from Los Angeles because that's where most, you know, network executives are, because that's where the entertainment industry is. But it's really expensive to live in San Francisco, and he likes where he's living in LA, so we'll just let him fly up every week. You're not going to have that kind of stuff happening. So I think there's a lot of good reasons for being in Las Vegas. So I'm optimistic about this as well. I'm sure David would have some more snark, but I think there's going to be more steak. I would rather have like some kind of crab on top as a topping, not mushroom caps. Foie gras butter, though, that sounds awesome. But I'm not sure if I've had that. Maybe I have, but that steak sounds really good, but I'd put some like crab on top. All right. Thanks for that one, Thomas. Well-crafted email. And the last one, this is DC and LA, UCLA at SoFi. Hey, guys, I really love your show. Great unbiased reporting, and you guys really have chemistry, especially today. I think the chemistry is amazing today between me and David. I'd like your opinion and plausibility of the following. Besides the decades-old below-average performance on the field, one thing that hinders UCLA prominence is the Rose Bowl. It's too far from Westwood, 30 miles, and to get there means going through the single-lane road residential area of Pasadena. That is always weird having to do that. I think you should break the Rose Bowl lease and play at SoFi Stadium. It's state-of-the-art, has mass transit capability, and has a media buzz around it. It also has luxury boxes for those corporate sponsors. Do you think this is a good idea? And if so, what would it take to do this? And what do you think the probability of this happening is happening in 3, 5, or 10 years? Thanks, DC and LA. I'd much rather David Woods answer this one. So this was actually the last question. So we'll have David, when he gets on next week, we'll have him get his thoughts on this. I don't know all the ins and outs of it. I know USC over the weekend end up using SoFi Stadium for recruiting purposes. So that was, you know, it's close to campus or whatever. So they would have, within, 6 miles or 10 miles or whatever it is, they had those huge video boards inside. They played like highlights and all kinds of stuff and like recruiting videos for the prospects that they would bring out there. They had 8 official visitors in this weekend, and they brought them all to that. And that was cool. As far as I think UCLA should use it if they can for recruiting or whatever. I mean, the Rose Bowl just has so much tradition. There's a level of prestige just playing there that you probably wouldn't have at SoFi. But it'd be pretty cool to play at SoFi as far as just like, hey, is it easier for the students to get there? Yes. is it easier for local alumni to get to SoFi? I would think so. Like, it's, you know, unless you live in Pasadena and you can like ride your bike to the stadium, it's freaking hard to get there. It's just not easy. And, you know, but if you're a UCLA fan, isn't that your only opportunity to play in the Rose Bowl? Sorry, David. I think UCLA hasn't played in the Rose Bowl game since like David's been alive. So I don't know. I'd love to get David's thoughts on this. I don't know what the lease is like. You know, there's a great option as far as you're just looking for a stadium to play in. It's not too big, right? I mean, if you're worried that you couldn't get 85,000 in a game, like you could at the Rose Bowl, you're just not seeing that much. Even the USC UCLA game, we're not seeing it like sold out like it used to be. I think, you know, just far as like football product, it's pretty cool. Modern, you got all the luxury boxes. Now they got some of that stuff at the Rose Bowl now after the renovation, the cool area where the media are, and they got some boxes and stuff. But this would definitely be a different feel to it. But my guess is the reasons why are more traditional and historical than this would be a better place for UCLA fans to watch a football game than the Rose Bowl. If it was just about that, probably, yeah, that makes sense. But otherwise, probably not. All right. Well, hey, that was pretty clean. It's, you know, it's a lot easier when only one person talks, because then you don't have to like hear the response, the other guy, if he disagrees with me or whatever. But hopefully you guys enjoyed it. I'm sorry we couldn't do a show together. We'll get back and do it again next week. We would like to do some kind of meetup. That would be great. Like to get at least voicemails, but maybe interviews with some of the individual publishers for the different schools. Just sort of get a post-spring update, what's going on with those programs. You know, guys like Hitler Day have real specific questions usually for the different schools. So maybe we can ask some of the stuff Hitler Day was asking about with some of the different publishers that we end up talking to. That would all be great. But we love hearing from you. Keep sending in the questions. Jump on the Reddit page, you know, tweet at us or tweet at me, basically. You know, positive reviews, 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. We love those as well. So I hope you get a little better feel for what's going on in the Pac-12 Conference over the past couple of weeks. And, you know, just from the show. And thanks for all the questions. Hopefully you like the insights I provided. Again, apologize, David, not being here, but we will get him back next week. All right, that's going to wrap things up. For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham, and we are the Podcast of Champions. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.